Okay, so if we look ahead a bit to next year and hopefully the pandemic receding and so on, so what's the main headlines of the agenda for future next year look like?
It sounds really boring, but it's just more of the same, which has really been the main headlines of our agenda for the last few years. So I think we would certainly look to make sure we deliver on the revenue synergies from the acquisitions we've just been talking about, and that's a real focus for the next 12 months. We've seen some fantastic momentum in our women's lifestyle portfolio in the US, some really good momentum in our homes portfolio. Really excited about that, but it's really big momentum but small numbers, which is really exciting because that's a big opportunity then when we look into next year. We think the Kiplinger brand is just fantastic, and so we're really excited about the opportunity to work with Kiplinger and then the GoCo business in terms of thinking about how we think about savings and wealth and investment and bringing that expertise to the market in the US. So that's a key thoughtfulness for us. And then otherwise, as we said, you know, we're moving to new offices in London, new offices in New York. We've got a new Atlanta hub opening up. So just looking to make sure we've got the right people in the right place to continue to scale the business over the next few years.
And you're basically an Anglo-American business or a British-American business. What's the differences between those two businesses for you, both in the environment they operate in and the businesses they are and how you run them?
Yeah, so we run the organization as a global organization because the audiences find us, and so that's why we've ended up operating in this manner. The reality is we write our content almost exclusively in English, and therefore our audiences are English speakers. And so bizarrely, we don't actually see that much difference in how the audience behaves, you know, the content they want to read, the way the markets behave, the advertising market, the e-com market. We don't really see that much localization or difference in that regard. However, we should absolutely recognise that these are completely different cultures. And there are lots of differences down to how we take our holidays, how we think about our holidays through to, you know, what matters in terms of, you know, your employment benefits, etc., that really are quite different. And so we have to be we operate as one team, and globally we have to be very locally aware of the differences. But then that's no different from London to Cardiff, as it is, you know, sometimes from, you know, London to New York. And so actually being hyper-regional in our thinking around our organisation is really important. And, you know, hand on my heart, we probably don't get that right all the time, because when the bigger you get, the more you kind of sometimes push stuff out and then realise afterwards, I didn't realise this was a factor in the New York region. So that's the thing we need to get better at and continue to pay attention to. But the biggest difference is more around just that attitude towards, you know, what you want in your personal life and how your wider economic environment looks for you.
I mean, there's a history of British companies doing badly in America, as we know, in all kinds of industries, including ours. Why is that? And do you consciously manage in a way that prevents your having the kind of difficulties that even some very good British businesses have had across the Atlantic?
I honestly don't know why that is. We haven't actively thought to manage it differently. What we've thought to do is do what's right for the audience. And I think possibly that's what's been at the heart of our approach. And so we've been audience-led in our global strategy. I certainly didn't set out to run a business that was going to be global in its reach. I think we have also been really honest about our organisational structure. So we are low-cost location operated, which does mean predominantly roles in the UK. But we will be in market where we think there's a need to be in market. And therefore, I think people understand the organisation they're joining. They understand how that's going to run. And so therefore, it's really important people get on board with that. And when we buy businesses, one of the things we quite often find is there's this kind of US-UK division between, you know, with both sides talking about the other side as if there's something, you know, slightly wrong there. We don't really have that at Future, because if you work for TechRadar, you work for TechRadar whether you're based in Sydney, London, Wales or New York. And therefore, the kind of desire to kind of attribute, you know, blame to a location, if that makes sense, just doesn't exist in that environment. And I think probably that's been a key factor for us. I was to kind of pick up one thing, which is we only talk about the US when we talk about the HR matters, if that makes sense, because the legislative environment is different, or when we talk about the advertising partners. Outside of that, we talk about the brands and the people, not the geography.
Perhaps one of the features of those companies that have had difficulties in the States is simply being condescendingly British, I was going to say, being a British company run from 4,000 miles away. So is that an area where you've had to do anything?
So that's a good point. And I was talking to someone this morning about how that part exercises me a little bit, because I feel like I'm unknown and we're unknown in the US, and yet we speak to one in three Americans online every month. And so we know America and we talk to American people all the time. And yet I don't think Future is known in America as an entity, whether that be within the media environment or within the business environment. And I was saying jokingly this morning that I actually wondered if it's kind of slightly willful blindness. You know, you're not on our patch, so we'll just kind of quite nicely ignore you. And so I'm going to kind of default to thinking that maybe that's what's going on a little bit, because when you probe behind the scenes, you tend to find people do know what we're doing and do understand our business. But you're right, we're not American, and America's a wonderful, wonderful country for supporting people in America and being entrepreneurial and backing that. And we're definitely, you know, a blow-in from the other side of the water.
And you use the word global quite a lot, but as you say, you're English language, really. And yet, of course, we know that the majority of people on this earth don't speak and read English. Is there a future for you in much beyond English language?
I don't think at this stage we see that opportunity. And I think one of the jobs of the CEO is quite often to prioritise. We've got so much opportunity in North America and so much more to go after there just now, that the distraction of trying to operate in multilingual, multi-jurisdictional environments, I just don't believe we need to go there to find our opportunities just now. And people often say to me, oh, why don't you look at something in Europe? And it would just be a distraction for us right now. And I think, you know, when we've got to 2 and 3 in America or North America in terms of our reach, then let's maybe revisit that conversation. But right now, I don't think that's a priority for us.
Do you think that media industry consolidation is a kind of inevitable thing? You know, is it inevitable that media companies will just get bigger and bigger and swallow up every small thing?
So I think that there's inevitably consolidation in the industry, because the industry continues to change, and therefore I've always said media is a disrupted industry permanently, and therefore businesses that operate in media that fail to remember that, I think, end up being consolidated. But I also think the flip side of that is that the media industry is full of innovation, because that's what makes it disruptive. And therefore, I think there'll constantly be new emerging media brands and new players into the market. So I think it continues to be a really interesting marketplace to be involved in. But I do think that there is an ongoing kind of shift. And maybe that is a kind of every decade, there's a kind of a readjustment or a realignment. And maybe post the last couple of years, we'll see what that looks like. I do think that, as we said at the start of this conversation, parts of the media industry are completely undervalued and underappreciated. And then I think there are parts of our industry which, you know, have got crazy valuations considering the value proposition. When you've got those two extremes, then you have to believe there's got to be a correction and consolidation.
And what's your single and most specific best wish for Future in 2022?
I think for the people who work at Future, just really, really want them to have a safe year. I think it's been a really hard last couple of years. And so at a personal level, I really want the people who work for us to just feel safe and confident in what lies ahead for them. I think for Future as an organisation, I just want to see it continue to flourish. You know, that's all we've ever wanted for the organisation. And so just continue to flourish and to, you know, grow in its ambitions is what we'd look forward for the next 12 months.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.